Michael Buhowski, award winner for the short comedy video set to Les Mis called One Grain More, talks with the president of Just Imagine Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Love that guy.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today, we are privileged to have on actor, composer, playwright, Michael Buhowski. Michael, welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to talk to you.
Hey, it's great talking with you, and for our listening audience out there, you've gained so much notoriety from One Grain More. You guys won the best short at the Flux Film Festival?
Yeah, that was incredibly exciting. You know, it's something we made One Grain More almost exactly 2 years ago, and it's basically a parody of the musical Les Miserables, but about food allergies, because, I mean, you know, why not? Those things go together pretty obviously. And we put it out on the internet, and it got about a little over 500,000 views. And then just one day I decided, I wonder if there are any film festivals that are interested in this weird kind of thing. So I submitted it to the Folk Film Festival, and they accepted it, and it won two awards there. One Best Short, which was for me and for my director, my co-director, Lily Bayrock. And it also won the Best of Audience Award, which was very exciting. And they sent us this weird trophy with an eyeball on it that is now on my desk and freaks me out from time to time, but it's very wonderful.
Well, you know, for our listening audience out there, let's play a little clip of One Grain More.
One grain more, a dash of millet flour might be the key. This never-ending road to gluten-free. This horrifying food I eat will never taste the same as wheat. One grain
a
more.
A cup of cornflake crumbs to meet my carbohydrate quota.
One grain more.
A teaspoon of some xanthan gum. And still it tastes like baking soda.
One more dairy substitute.
Will I ever eat again?
Drinking oat milk from a carton.
What I give for pizza pie.
Now I spend my days confused.
Or a slice of meat for rye.
Wondering how you milk an oat.
It's so good to see you, quinoa. You're the protein source I chose. Still you look as if I've seen ya coming out of someone's nose.
Flax instead of eggs, try to make it whip. Now what do we use instead of chocolate chips? Carrot doesn't work, carrot is a trap. Anyone who's had it knows it tastes like crap.
When the hell is this stuff dinner?
Burned and burned today and now.
Why does it smell like something done?
And earth is listening.
Love, I'm finally defecated.
This does not feel like a bun.
Do you hear the people sneeze and cough and wheeze?
I want to ask you about your cast there. I mean, everyone in there just seems, you know, is so talented.
One of the amazing things about working in musical theater, at least, and I think in a lot of art forms, is you are constantly surrounded by an immensely talented group of people. So the cast is made up of four people. I play the guy who opens it, which is Jean Valjean, my nice little beard going on there. Lily Bayrock plays Cosette. she and I met while we were at NYU together, and she also co-directed with me, which was a huge help because she very much complements my style of directing. And Megan Ermilio and Michael DeFlorio, who played Marius and EpiPen, the real name is Eponine, and I can't tell you how many people have written to me telling me that we got it wrong. No, it's Eponine, and people don't seem to get that EpiPens are allergy-related. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and Megan and Michael are actually my voice and acting students, which is how I got them brought into the project. And then we had some amazing people behind the set. We had Dina Blumenthal and Bernie Langer operating the camera and doing lighting, and Matthew Dorsch and Lizzie Standard as production assistants. So it's a pretty small but very dedicated group.
Oh, you know, the video, I strongly recommend to everyone to take a look at it. And we'll have a link on our webpage. And, of course, you can see it on YouTube.
Yes, it's also available on onegrainmore.com. There's loads of extra information about the cast and the project and all of the strange Q&As we've gotten over the years.
Oh, you know, it's just wonderful. Now, you know what? You are a writer, too, are you not?
Yes, I do a whole bunch of things. I'm primarily a musical theater composer and lyricist, but I'm also a non-musical playwright and screenwriter, and I also work as an actor, so you'll see me on One Grain More. I do a lot of work on the stage and on the screen, and I direct, and occasionally I get a minute off, and then I do a lot of work in health and healthcare activism and advocacy, which actually gets worked into most of the writing that I do, as you'll see, you know, in One Grain More is a good example. Food allergies is a very, very serious subject. And there's a lot of people who are very profoundly affected by this, and they are severely limited in their dietary choices and really even sometimes their choices of where they can go. And I wanted to give them a chance to laugh at something that has really been only negative in their lives and give them some positive meaning to it. And overall, the responses have been exactly that, and it's been incredibly gratifying.
The video is hysterical, and you know, I'm just laughing out loud, which I don't hardly, you know, do. You know, most of the time you see something and you go like, "Yeah, that's pretty amusing," but then when you're just laughing out loud, you know, you've struck gold.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I mean, it was very easy to write because what happened was 2.5 years ago, it was New Year's Eve, and I had recently been diagnosed not with food allergies but with a large number of food sensitivities, and I was literally given 16 foods that I wasn't allowed to eat that were like eggs, wheat, soy, dairy, lettuce, literally the weirdest things that you would imagine nobody could possibly be allergic to. And basically all I was allowed to eat was cabbage and rice. So I was sitting at home on New Year's Eve and I'm baking cookies for a party, making chocolate chip cookies that are made out of either chocolate chips or cookie dough. And I was listening to Les Mis, and I just started singing along, and I made a joke of this never-ending road instead of to Calvary to gluten-free. I happened to be at home, and my mother was listening, and she laughed hysterically. She said, "That's really funny." I was like, "Really? Should I write a whole thing?" She said, "Absolutely." So I canceled my New Year's Eve plans, and I wrote out the first draft of One Grain More. And the first person I called was Lily Bayrock, because Lily also has a whole number of food sensitivities, and I love working with Lily. We've worked on a whole bunch of stuff, and I expected her to tell me that I was out of my mind and that we shouldn't do this, but she loved it and signed a board right away, and we went from there.
The short that you guys did is hysterical, but, you know, you brought up a point about, you know, there's a lot of people who have food allergies, and some of them are pretty severe.
Yeah, you know, it does become difficult because it's really, I mean, it's becoming more and more prevalent. At this point, we're very used to people with celiac who need to be gluten-free because they have an absolute devastating reaction to gluten. We're used to people having allergies to milk and allergies to peanuts, but people can be allergic to pretty much anything. And, you know, it sounds so silly often that we don't take it very seriously, which it's interesting to hear myself say that because, of course, what did I just go do? I didn't take it very seriously, did I? But my goal in doing that was not to not take it seriously, but to, like I said, to give people an opportunity to laugh at something that normally gives them nothing but trouble and to really promote awareness for just how hard it is to actually bypass all of these restrictions.
Especially if you're not aware of them, you know?
Yeah, and this has, I think, done really good things for making more people aware of, oh, all right, let's say you have an allergy to corn and you have to avoid corn. You pretty much eliminated something like 90% of the food that exists in America. So these are pretty challenging problems. And, you know, overall, the response to it was pretty much unanimously, thank you for creating this and even from people who had nothing to do with food allergies, they were like, this is hysterical, this is wonderful. Every once in a while, I would get an email from somebody who would challenge me about, you know, that I'm not taking this seriously. And my response to that was, you know, they said, would you make fun of a handicapped person? I remember was the one email that really kind of got to me. And my answer to that was that if I myself were in a wheelchair, then I would absolutely make fun of handicapped people because I believe that gives me the right to.
Right.
And because I have these same food restrictions, that's what allows me, I think, to play with it and to have this very cathartic experience of turning it into a musical parody. I would only ever make fun of something that I myself have experienced.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from with that. But, you know, you're speaking of musicals and things like that. You know, I want to ask you about your participation in Rent.
Mm-hmm. So Rent is pretty much, if I had to identify the single thing that changed my life the most, it's Rent. I first experienced it when I was 14 years old. I was at summer camp, musical theater, drama summer camp, because that's how cool of a kid I was. And literally the day of the final performance, the group came up to me and they said, we want to perform a number from the musical Rent called La Vie Bohème, and we want you to play Mark. And I had never heard it before. I only knew musicals like Les Mis and West Side Story. So I figured, all right, well, I can learn a song in a couple hours. How hard will it be? Well, La Vie Bohème, the lyrics of La Vie Bohème are absolutely insane and crazy to memorize. But that was my first exposure to Rent. And after that, I started listening to it a bunch. And I just fell in love with the story. I fell in love with the characters. And above all, I identified so strongly with the spirit of Jonathan Larson, who a lot of people know died of an aortic aneurysm the night before Rent was released off Broadway. Yeah, so I really started writing musicals largely because of that. I felt he was doing all of this work that was so similar to the work that eventually I would want to do, which was to take health issues and to put them on the stage. So I got to perform in Rent as Mark, which was wonderful. I did. I moved up to Hackensack, New Jersey for 4 months to do a production of Rent up there. And I've also gotten the opportunity to meet the Larson family, which was probably the best night of my entire life, and to get to just talk to them about Jonathan. And, you know, if I have one real goal in life, it would be to carry on the work of Jonathan Larson.
Well, it seems like people are going to be following in your footsteps, so, you know, with the body of work that you've done. You know, another thing for all our listeners are curious about is you have a CBS show in New York. It's called The 5 Best Things to Do in NYC Tonight. You know, tell us about that.
Yeah, so that's something that I'm kind of only a little bit connected to. That's through this production called Blogalogs, which is this amazing show in New York City. They basically take the weirdest stuff you can find on the internet, and it's the internet, so you can find some pretty weird stuff. And they perform it live, which when they first told me about this idea, I thought, how could that be funny? And just reading, you know, Amazon reviews and forum posts, but this is one of the funniest shows, if not the funniest shows I've ever seen. They're actually doing a run right now that ends this weekend. They do a new show every couple months or so. And every once in a while they come to me, they just made me actually their official composer. So they come to me once in a while with some weird thing they found on the internet. And without changing a word, I have to turn that into a song for them to perform, which is always just among the most ludicrous stuff that I do. And it is so much fun because it is just so bizarre and it's real. That's the amazing thing about it. These are real people who will talk about things that you couldn't imagine anybody talking about publicly. So the top 10 things to see in New York, that's really Blogalogs, which I'm very honored to be associated with, but certainly can't claim credit for.
Yeah, you know, another thing that one of my personal favorites is your Safe and Sound, a gothic rock musical.
You've really done your research on me. This is great. Yes, I've written 3 musicals. The one that I've dedicated the last 9 years of my life to writing is called Fresh, and we're prepping right now to do an Equity stage reading of that here in New York City. And we did a Kickstarter for it a few years ago and raised about $12,000 for it. So we're getting ready to put that up. And Fresh is the musical that's nearest and dearest to my heart. It's a pop rock musical that's semi-autobiographical about my first year at college and what I was dealing with at the time. I have connective tissue disorder called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, one of the reasons why I'm so very involved in health advocacy and such. And it's really largely the story of me learning how to cope with that and also just being in New York City with all of these crazy things that happen in New York City. FreshTheMusical.com, you can find out more about that. So then the next one is Safe and Sound. Safe and Sound is a gothic rock, really more of a play than a musical, because in a musical there's sung dialogue. This is about a gothic rock musician, so anytime there's music being done, it's because they're performing the music at a concert, kind of a blend of a musical and a play. And that's about a gothic rock superstar named Allie, who writes this incredibly deep music that talks to her having immense levels of character and hard moral and psychological struggles. And you would imagine from her writing that she's just this deep, sensitive, wonderful, and in pain human being. But in real life, she's just completely cut off. She has nothing to do with anybody, and she's totally cold to everyone around her. And the story of the play is you learning how she became that way and how those two beings can coexist in one world.
You know, I love it. I hope all our listeners around the world, give it a go.
Yeah, and there's samples of it on my website. I must confess, music to me has been a strange journey. When I was a kid, my parents liked to tell stories about how I was 2 years old in the car and they'd turn on the Beatles on the radio or, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and I'd say, "No, la, la," because I hated music. Yeah, this is wonderful to me, and it's the irony that's brought up is every Thanksgiving in my family and whatnot. But I really hated music, and when I was 12 or so, I went to my brother, my older brother, who's 7 years older than me, Eric, and was an amazing writer as well. And I asked him, "Why do you listen to music all the time? What does this mean to you?" I felt like it was a Passover Seder. I've done a lot of those. What does this mean to you?
But does this song speak to you?
Yeah. And he smiled at me and said, "One day you're going to have your own CD collection and you're going to understand what music can do for people." And that turned my life around, because I went from a kid who was playing sports all the time, as you would imagine, not particularly well, to somebody who knew the second I walked on that stage exactly what I wanted to do with my life. And after that, I started listening to musical theater, but I didn't want to listen to any rock music. And, you know, fast forward to 10 years later, and basically there are two types of music that I listen to constantly. One of them is film soundtracks, which is where classical orchestral music basically morphed into. And the other one is heavy, heavy hard rock and gothic rock. You know, you probably couldn't have two more opposite sides of the spectrum.
Yeah, you go from one side of the spectrum to the other.
Yeah, I've come to accept there's a lot of duality in my life, and I've come to just try to embrace it rather than figure out what on earth is wrong with me that I go to these two extremes all the time.
Let me get your opinion. What did you think about when like the Who came out with their rock opera? And I know that they're in production for Queen's going to do one.
Yeah, the Who released Tommy. Tommy was actually the first rock musical I was in, also at summer camp. And apparently, I was able to sell Creepy very, very well. So I'm proud of that. And Quadrophenia and Tommy, I think, are usually credited as the first rock musicals. Mostly what I write are pop rock musicals, although I do write some classical music as well. And yeah, those were the first rock operas. And then, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar came along by Andrew Lloyd Webber. So when they were adapted to the stage, the only one I know really well is Tommy. And I'll be honest, and I think a lot of people are going to hate me as soon as I say this, but I much preferred the Broadway cast album to the Who's album.
Well, you know, I'm gonna stop you right there, because you know what? I don't think anybody's gonna hate you for that comment, because I think most people agree with that, and I think even the Who
really
would agree with you, because they're like, hey, you know what? We are a rock band. We tried something and it worked, but when people do it that are really good at it, it really works, you know.
And you know, none of it would have been possible without. I mean, Keith Moon, especially. If I'm talking as a composer, and when I'm writing out drum parts, I mean, Keith Moon changed what drumming is. And The Who is really an incredibly novel band. For me, it's more of an issue of, you know, I'm 27 years old, so I didn't really grow up listening to this music. So when I listen to the old Who recordings and the Beatles recordings, it's not that I don't like the music, because when I hear them in different formats, I do like them a lot. It's more that I have trouble identifying with those older quality recordings that are a little less polished.
It's interesting that you would say that, because There's also another term for it, and it's called contempt prior to investigation. You already formed an opinion, and you haven't even heard it.
Yeah. Another thing I get hired to do a lot is to orchestrate or arrange a piece that doesn't have available sheet music, and I'll listen to the recording, and I'll write an arrangement based on whatever band instruments or classical instruments are available for whoever wants me to write it. And I have found very often I get songs that I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to do that song. But I've found that if I listen to a song over and over again and I really study how it works melodically, harmonically, orchestrationally, I can't help but love the song. The more I get to know it, I will love that song by the time I'm done with it, which is kind of interesting because you'd expect that I'd be sick of it, but that's not what happened. But for me, you know, once I started listening to music actively, the artist that inspired me most outside of people like Jonathan Larson and Claude Michel Schoenberg and Alain Boublil, who wrote Les Mis, really were Billy Joel and Queen. And those are the bands that really first got me, that my musical style is most influenced by in the pop rock world. And then later, in terms of my gothic rock work, I just love Evanescence. And I say that to people and they look at me like I'm an emo teenager, which is totally fair.
I like Evanescence.
Oh, and Pink Floyd. Oh, my God. That is something that I discovered during college, and I wish I had had around me all my life, and that very much influenced the way I especially write for guitar. David Gilmour on that guitar, I mean, that guitar says more than the lyrics do, and the lyrics are unbelievably brilliant and amazing, so that's quite a statement.
Now, you also have a studio where you give voice and acting lessons.
Yes, I do.
How does that work? I mean, you know, if we're in the city, you know, how would we go about, you know, getting an appointment and be able to work with you? I mean, that's got to be quite an honor just in itself.
Certainly, yeah. The best way to find out about my voice and acting lessons are on my website, michaelbachowski.com. And you can find out really about my teaching philosophy. I've carved out a pretty unique niche over the years that I'm very proud of and that I love to work with, which is specifically that I take the worlds of acting and the worlds of singing, and I say that these are all part of the exact same thing. And that is very much what I believe the musical theater community needs, because so very often we're finding actors who really can't sing all that well and singers who really can't act very well. And it's because I think if they've been taught both things, they've taken acting classes and they've taken singing classes. And what I do is I take all of the classical vocal technique that's necessary to sing roll for each shows a week if you're doing musical theater. And at the very same time as I'm doing that, I say, what does this character want? What do every line in this song mean? And more importantly, what does it mean to you? And what do you have to bring to it? And I've had a lot of success with that, especially in preparing people for auditions for either shows or conservatories. I'm yet to have a regular student that I prepare for a conservatory audition that they do not get it as their top choice. And that's just because most people go out there and it's just about belting the highest note for musical theater. And everyone can do that. It's very impressive, but a whole lot of people can do that. But to be able to truly sing and truly act at the same time is a very unique gift, and that's what I try to give to my students.
You know, that's fantastic. And you have your lessons in the east side of New York City and also in Philadelphia, correct?
Yeah, I go back and forth a lot. I'm looking ultimately into being in New York more permanently, not least because it's insanely expensive to have an apartment up here. So going home and not spending several days a week in it at a time is a little bit frustrating. But it's very hard because I have phenomenal students back in Philadelphia, and I don't just mean that from a singing perspective. They are amazing singers, they are amazing actors, but they are amazing people, and they're like siblings to me, and it's very hard for me to say goodbye to them. So far I keep going back.
Well, I'll tell you what, Michael, you know what, you are doing amazingly well and having a fantastic career and entertaining all of us out here at the tender age of 27 years old. And we want to thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been such a delight having you on. We hope you come back on and talk with us again sometime in the future.
Please have me on anytime. This has been wonderful. Love talking to you, and I'm happy to chat anytime.
To learn more about Michael Buchowski, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.